With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis the midwife.
And I'm Becky the doula.
Welcome to Notes from the Mother Box, where we will be having real and frank conversations about the highs and lows of the parenting journey. We are delighted that we have a fantastic partnership this season with Sophie Le Giraffe, especially because this year is Sophie's 60th birthday.
And we have some exciting things lined up in Sophie's honour across this season, including a special birthday celebration episode.
If you want to see the full range of Sophie Le Giraffe products, head on over to sophielegiraffe.co.uk, and in the meantime, pop the kettle on, pour yourself a cuppa, sit back and enjoy this week's episode of Notes from the Mother Box. Today we'd love to welcome Melissa Suffield to the show. Melissa is a mother, an actor, owner of River and Six, and author of the Fuck I'm a Parent blog.
That's
Melissa,
me.
Thank you for coming on.
No,
thank you so much for joining us.
I have to say, actually, when we were looking you up, I was reading through your blog and I had so many moments of yes sir, like reading.
Yeah, just, I'm not a mincer of words.
No.
I do just tend to say whatever's on my mind, and if it resonates with people, great, and if it doesn't, also great, because yeah. I don't actually mind. You know, opinions are there for a reason. And yeah. Debate is good and healthy, and I
definitely
enjoy it. So I would kind of hate it if everyone agreed with me all the time. I'd be like, I must be doing something wrong then.
Yeah.
If everyone thinks I'm doing a good job, I must be doing something wrong.
But it's authentic and it's real, and it kind of, there's no airs and graces. And I can imagine, and we'll talk about this more as we go on today, you must have loads of people reach out to you and say, thank you for saying that, because that's exactly how I feel. And now you validated my feelings.
Yeah, so many. When I was pregnant, I kind of dipped into the blogging world, like as a reader, to kind of go, well, you know, what's going to be the best buggy? I don't want to hear from the brand because obviously they think they've got the best buggy. No, I want to hear from people who have used it. And it was the same with lots of different things. And I just never found quite what I was after. I kind of, you know, people would say, oh, this is a very, it's an alternative blog. Oh, they're so funny. And I was like, it's not that funny or alternative. I don't feel seen in this person's journey, which is fine. It's their journey. I don't have to feel seen or catered for in everyone's writing at all. But it definitely wasn't what I was feeling. But my journey was pretty unique. My partner was on the cruise ship for 22 weeks of the pregnancy. So I don't really know what I was looking for. A friend, someone to come and do my washing up. I'm not sure, but it was... I didn't kind of find what I needed to. So I just thought, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to write some stuff. I'm just going to start writing, and whatever comes out, comes out.
Do you feel a little bit, because your partner was on the cruise ship and you had this time to yourself, that in a way, by doing the blog, by that being a form of sort of like diary keeping or communication sharing, that was your sort of connection there with other people and other experiences and airing how you were feeling about things as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely handy. And to be honest, I don't write on the blog enough, especially now that River's here. And I'm like, I might stretch myself slightly too thin. Like just a smidge. I've definitely taken a lot onto my plate. But when I was pregnant as well, I mean, I have like drafts and drafts and drafts of blogs that I haven't posted, because either they're not relevant to me now and it feels disingenuous to post it when it's not relevant, or because I went, no, I can edit that better. And then by the time I came back to it, I was like, I'm kind of over that now.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily.
Totally.
So there's a kind of a heavy editing process just by waiting and it becoming completely defunct for the blog. But yeah, I definitely need to write it more. But Instagram was then even more of that because it's so instant. So I could post instantly, get a response instantly. Mm. And that was a really good way of connecting with people as well.
What I like about your blog, though, is that Instagram can sometimes be a bit polished, a bit kind of, you know, like I think sometimes really real stories are really validating. And we'll come back to it because we want to talk about feeding. But the blog you wrote about mastitis, I suffered terribly with mastitis.
That's the worst, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
It's horrible.
I mean, it's the, like, I don't think I've ever been that ill in my life.
No.
And I was reading it, it actually made me well up because it was validating. Do you know what I mean? When someone else has been through it and you're like, it's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, and I really had to be careful, especially with that blog. And to be honest, any blog that I do about feeding or pumping or anything, because I have to just kind of say, guys, I'm not a lactation consultant. Mm-hmm. I'm not on any kind of level that I can give this advice to you and it's medically sound. All I can do is give you my experience. Mm-hmm. And you might find that my experience is bang on for what you're doing, but it also might be completely the opposite. I think sometimes, especially new breastfeeding mums, don't understand how different the journeys are. They just go, well, if we all do the same stuff, it'll all come out the same. And it's like, no.
It is all different. We've all got it's different. It's not a cookie cutter.
Yeah.
It's not a cookie cutter experience. No.
Definitely. It's really not. So I always have to really make sure that I don't come across like I'm giving medical advice. But then I obviously spoke to a lactation consultant as well. I was like, can you add some stuff that just like a disclaimer almost, and just going, you know, I'm going to give you this piece of advice. And if I'm wrong, she's going to just make sure that, you know, this is a personal experience and not something that I'm saying, do this because it might not be right for you. And it might end up like harming your supply or just not being good for you and your baby. And that's the last thing I want.
And you do that really well. And I think as professionals, I really liked that you did that, because sometimes we kind of read stuff and think, oh, actually that's not factually, you know, that might be your experience, but that's quite unique. Or so it was really good. I liked that you did
Thank you. Yeah, I'm absolutely certain I've done stuff that wouldn't be like a guideline, but it worked for me. So I did it, you know?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Melissa, haven't we all? Quite frankly.
Yeah,
I was going to say, only every day of my life.
Totally. I mean, I was hilarious as a new mum who'd been a midwife by the time, I mean, going back 10 years ago when I had my son, I'd already been a midwife for 6 years by that point. And I was like, I know this is what the textbook says I should do, but I did so many things just that worked for our family that I had to, like, and because I had this midwife hat on, and then I had this like new mum just trying to get by hat on at exactly the same time. And I got to be honest with you, 9 times out of 10, new tired mum just trying to get by won the argument.
Yeah,
so I think
absolutely. Well, I had to kind of, an argument would probably be too broad, but there was a woman and she was saying, you know, never leave your baby unattended for sleep and whatever if they're under 6 months. And I was like, okay, at night, you know, he's not going anywhere and blah, blah, blah. And someone said, oh, he naps in his cot for 10 minutes while I do washing up. And everyone was going, you can't do that. And I was like, I'm going to just quickly stand up for a little bit. I said, playing devil's advocate, I need a wee. My son is asleep in his Moses basket. Mm. Do I pick him up, bring him to the toilet, or do I leave him where he is? He's 2 months old. He ain't going anywhere. And then she was like, well, I tend to baby wear. And I was like, okay, devil's advocate again. I'm cooking bacon with a baby on my front, which is safer. Cooking bacon with a baby on my front, spitting at the back of its head, or leaving him in a Moses basket in a safe room where I can hear him. Like, it was just that thing of going, they're guidelines for a reason. And while we should follow the guidelines, we don't have to stick to the guidelines.
Totally agree. And I also, and this might be controversial to say, but I feel like sometimes when people point the finger at you, they're pointing the finger back at themselves because it's feelings that they have about their own motherhood journey.
Yeah, I think sometimes when they when they go, oh, you've got to do this, it's because they're doing it and it's making them miserable.
Yeah.
So they have to say, well, you've got to do it too. I can't be the only one who's doing this and feeling sad about it. But yeah, I just think everyone's journey is different, and then everyone's home is different. Everyone's life is different. Yeah. You know, my house is kind of like a cottage shape. So River is 12 months now, and he's off all over the place. He's walking, he's bouncing around. He's literally at this present moment got a bruise on either side of his head from where he's just stacking it into furniture. But I can't make that living room any safer for him. I have done, we've got soft play, we've got toys everywhere. And I've had to use a travel cot and my sofa pushed in to make sure he can't leave this. I mean, it must be about 4 foot by 7 foot space that he has to play in, because the rest of my downstairs has stone floors and a step down into the kitchen and a step up to the flight of stairs. I'm like, I can't keep him safe here. Yeah. So you know, yeah. for someone else's house where they've got one of those big living rooms with space in the floor, or it's an open plan thing yeah. with carpet, you know, I have to make adjustments that maybe another family wouldn't, and vice yeah, versa.
Definitely. And also, like, who's there to support you? We can't compare ourselves. And I remember thinking, it's so funny, you get this list of things that you need to be doing. And I remember I had two kids in 18 months. So my daughter was born when my son was 18 months old. Well, hey, there's no way I can constantly be with a baby. Yes, I wore her in a sling sometimes, but not all the time. Oh, and exactly. meet the needs of a one-year-old who yeah. was oh needing his lunch made, and he was needing to help with potty training and all sorts of things going on. And so suddenly you go, oh, well, that rule about, you know, not leaving your baby for 5 or 10 minutes. And and you know what the interesting thing is, and perhaps it's just completely obvious, is that she was a baby who self-settled so well because I didn't go to her every couple of minutes, and not yeah. in a mean way, but just because Big Brother needs me for 5 minutes.
No, absolutely.
So you're just going to have to slot into our family unit there. And I think, what can you do? We're only human. It's our saving grace.
Just going back, obviously, as a midwife and doula, we love a birth story. How was your pregnancy and how was your birth? How were the experiences for you?
Pregnancy was great. I was really active for not exercising. I hate exercise. I wasn't running or lifting weights because I didn't do that before I was pregnant. I certainly didn't do it after. But I was super active. I didn't slow down at all.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, make sure you take some time for yourself. I was like, that's boring. I haven't got the energy to use less energy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I did Panto when I was 26 to 29 weeks pregnant. So I was literally on stage as Dorothy. Like,
oh my God.
What is she going to be like, 10?
Because you know your lungs get so squished up, don't you? So I've got a couple of I had a few singer clients last year who were doing quite a lot of recording work, and you know, projecting your voice when you're got no lung capacity is,
that was the thing. So I kind of said, oh, do you know what, we're gonna have to possibly adapt the dancing, and I'm probably gonna have to get a child to put the shoes on me, because I definitely at this stage I'm too massive, because I had quite a big bump as well quite early on, so I was really battling against the elements. But then I started doing the shows and I was like, I am absolutely shittered. Like, my lungs are dead, and it's not from the dancing, it's from the singing. So it was exhausting. And I finished on Christmas Eve, which is also my birthday, and I remember going in early and sleeping under the table because I was like, I'm so tired, I can't see. Like, I actually cannot see straight.
Darling.
So that was possibly a bit off more than I could chew. But then within a day and a half, I was like, back to it. So I was like, I'm ready to go. I've always been a little bit energizer bunny. Obviously, I said my partner was away from week 13 to week 33. No, week 11 to week 33. Mm-hmm. And so in that time, I built all the nursery furniture. I painted the whole room, including the rainbow feature wall, which I love but regret because it was such hard work. I didn't stop.
So, I'd like you to come and stay in my house for a little while, please.
Well, I have to say, I'm slightly less energetic now. When I walk past the sink and I'm like, wish I had a dishwasher. I'm like, now I'm slightly more tired all the time. But yeah, no, I just didn't stop. So when my partner then came home, still didn't stop. I was like, let's go shopping. Let's go to Canterbury. Let's go to London for the day and let's do what we need to do.
Wow. So you had loads of energy in your pregnancy.
Oh, yeah. Always. Yeah. I think I was sleeping a lot in the first like 4 or 5 weeks. Yeah. Falling asleep at like 8 on the sofa.
Yeah, that tiredness is unreal, isn't it?
That was insane. I was like, I've not even done anything yet. I can't even see it. Like, what's going on? And then I, towards the end, was falling asleep earlier. But that was it, really. I still, when I was awake, was pretty bounding around. And then it got past my due date and I was like, come on, man, like walking all the time, doing it all. And then I was 40+3, and that was kind of when twinges started, and they ramped up really quickly. Like,
oh wow,
they went from being, oh, this is probably it, and I kind of laid stupidly, did not sleep. They kicked in at 11 o'clock at night. I did not fall asleep, so kind of said to Robert, I think this could probably be the start of it, but you know, go to sleep. I didn't. Little did I know, I wouldn't sleep. This was Friday evening. I wouldn't sleep until Monday evening.
Yeah, this is not
even
happened.
A little wink.
I know.
And can I say, this is something I always talk about when I run my classes and I do my one-to-ones, is that, but hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it, Melissa?
Yeah.
It's like when those twinges start, even though it's really, really typical to feel like, bit nervous, a bit excited, like you're going to meet your baby, like conserving your energy in those. Now, you don't need to go into a deep sleep, but just resting as much as you can. I always say, do that at that point in the early part of the latent phase of labour, because when you are pushing that baby out in 10 hours' time, 2 days' time, 3 days' time, because obviously latent phase can last quite a long time for some people, you'll sort of thank yourself for resting a bit more in the early bit. But you know what? It's so typical. So many women and partners will say they do that.
It started up as being, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Wicked. Let's crack on. Like, Energizer Bunny and Moo's like, come on, let's do it. Let's get going.
I can imagine, Melissa, you being like that. I've got to say.
Pacing around, having a little walk going, this is very cool. But then I suddenly, it was weird. I kind of went to a place where I was like, well, if I sleep, it might all stop. And I was so desperate to get this little bugger out at this stage. I'm so fat. I'm so enormous. I literally can't get comfortable. Sat up, stood up, laying down. Like, I literally am so uncomfortable all the time. If I sleep, it might stop. It might all go away. So I was like, I'm just going to stop and be very still. Just concentrate on it and see if I can will it out of me. Yeah. That didn't work. But then it got really quite intense very quickly. And I was like, oh, it must be ramping up. This must be getting to that place. So we were going out for walks and I was physically having to stop because, you know, they were pretty bad. And I realised they were coming very close together.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So straight away.
Yeah. So neither one of us drives either. So this was a problem. And I was kind of saying, you know, we're going to need to like book a taxi. So we don't want to be too close because I definitely don't want to give birth in a taxi. But I also don't necessarily. Anyway, it was a whole thing. So I was like, let's go in, because they were coming together. They were maybe like 2-3 minutes apart and lasting anywhere between 20 seconds and 4 minutes. They were so weird. So I was like trying to time them. Just going, I can't actually time them because they're all over the place. So I was like, let's go in anyway. They sent me away because I wasn't even a little bit dilated. And I was like, how am I not even a bit dilated? But this is insane. I went home and just, that was it. They were coming. They were like 5 minutes long with almost no time to breathe in the middle. I later found out he was back to back. So this makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And I was like, this has been horrendous. So I literally just laid in the bath, which didn't help him being back to back at all. But it was the only place that I felt comfortable. And I was like, he's back to back. We should deal with it another time. We'll deal with it later. That's a problem for future Melissa. But present Melissa needs to be in the bath, laying down on her back right now. I'd also had a home birth visit as well, because I was quite keen on the idea of having a home birth. But in the end went, let's not do that. Because, you know, it was a whole thing. I was like, oh, do you know what? Actually, let's just go to the birthing centre, the hospital I gave birth at. I had a really lovely maternity-led unit, a midwife-led unit, sorry. And I was like, that's fine. We'll go there. But then we actually called the home birth thing. So I was like, I can't move. Like, I literally cannot get myself out of this bath into a taxi back to the hospital. I can't do that. Called the home birth team. They were like, yeah, brilliant. We'll get someone out to you. 20 minutes later, we can't actually locate the second midwife, so we're not going to get to you. I was like, what? Call another one. They were like, we literally can't get hold of her. So we called another taxi, went back in. I was only 2 centimeters, but they could see what state I was in. They were like, we're gonna pop you in a tub, don't you worry. And they'd given me a sweep when I first went in as well, which I think could possibly help things along as well. And then, yeah, I sat labouring in the tub for ages. They gave me pethidine, did nothing. I said, what else can I have? And they went, do you want some codeine? I was like, codeine is what I take for a headache and it rarely touches the sides. But anyway, I went, yeah, sure, get me the codeine. 4 hours later, she comes back up at night. This is what happens when you give birth at 3 a.m. and there's like no one around. And I'm saying, Robert, can you go and find her? He was like, no, it's rude. I was like, I swear to God, go and find the nurse. So he'd wander out and go, I literally can't find her. And I was like, oh my God, I feel very alone. So I think when I was reading about birth plans and stuff, it was all, you know, be calm and you want to be on your own. I've just quickly realised, being the extrovert that I am, I literally want people around me all the time. I don't mind how many hands are going up me, how many people are prodding at me. I literally don't care. I just want people to talk to all the time. And I think, you know, Melissa, had I just gone straight to labour ward, I'd have been over the moon. The baby would have been out of me almost instantly. But I was uncomfortable in being left alone.
I think this again goes back to, it's not just one experience fits all. And we do talk about, you know, midwives taking a step back, and I actually, this is another thing I always talk about, especially when we talk about breathing in the second stage when baby's coming down. Some women want to just do it on their own and follow their body and their intuition, And some women actively have said to me over the years, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And I've seen the look in their eyes, and the look is saying, when you do that, when you support me in that way, when you guide me, I feel safer.
Yeah.
And I feel more in control.
Also, I'm an actress. I love people telling me doing that I'm a good job. Like, I want people literally to go to me, oh my God, you're doing amazing. And there was no one there to validate me. I was like, how dare you, for a start? I'm doing the most amazing thing in the world.
You needed a director,
right,
darling.
I literally needed a director, a full audience. I needed attention badly and I didn't have it. So someone came back in and went, give me some gas and air. I can't believe I haven't asked for it by that point. I'm like, right, this is my drug of choice. And I didn't put that thing down for 12 hours. And I'm literally not talking like... I literally was huffing on it for 12 hours nonstop. I refused to put it down. I said, I'm going to grab that cheeky epidural that you mentioned way back when. And she just went to me, she looked at me and went, I think you've come as far as you can. I was like, rude, but okay, let's go. So that was the only time that I actually used the hypnobirthing skills that I'd done in courses and all sorts. Like the visualization and all of that did... very little for me. I think by this point I was so far gone, I literally couldn't focus my attention on anything. And I think if Robert had tried to do like a light touch massage on me, I would have punched him in the throat. There is no doubt in my mind that I would have gone off. But I used the breathing badly for the epidural. And I was the director at that point. I was like, right, a contraction is coming, so don't go near me with a big needle that could potentially damage me. I was like, literally like, okay, go and just go. But that was like the best thing in the world. And if I'm ever ridiculous enough to have another baby, I will literally go 4 centimeters, jab me up or whatever it is, and just go have it, because it made such a difference.
When you need them, they are amazing, aren't they? So with my first, I tried a home birth, and then I think at 8 I got stuck. She was back to back, so it was like you stop start, really painful. And then I think at about 8 centimeters, she was getting tired, I was getting tired, and we were like, okay, let's just go in. And I remember kind of saying to my husband, I'd heard the list of possible side effects from the epidural so many times. I'm like, I don't want that. And he's like, cool. And Barm was like, you literally didn't care. The guy was reading out. And I'm like, yeah, just give me the pen. Let me sign it.
That's literally what I did as well.
Let me sign it.
I said, Robert, can you deal with that? He gave me this like laminated piece of paper. I was thinking, these women must be sick over this piece of paper all the time. I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that. I was like, Robert, can you just read this? Advocate for me. That was your whole job. Advocate. Anyway, that went in. That was great. I sent Robert out to get me a KFC. That was good. And I had the midwife, and also we had a student midwife as well. They came in, chatted to me for ages. I'm like, this is the experience I'm here for. Basically a hospital stay at this point. I'm having a wonderful time. Then they were like, we're going to pop your waters because I haven't gone. Did that. Crazy amounts of meconium in there, like crazy amounts.
Really?
So they were like, okay, so we're gonna like speed things along a little bit, and we're gonna get you pushing at 2 p.m. we're gonna come back and we're gonna start pushing. It took the full, they were like, you've got 2 hours, and then it'll be, we'll wheel you off to theater. And he literally was born 3 minutes before, like, 2 hours was up. And this kid was caked in poo. He was caked in it.
Oh, and it's so sticky, isn't it?
It was foul. It was absolutely gross. But I was just like, I'm so tired. Although, to be honest, that whole pushing, it didn't feel like it was 2 hours at all, because the epidural was still in effect. I was just kind of just going, is it okay? Like, you wouldn't to see my face. And Robert said it was like the calmest thing I've seen in my life. You wouldn't know you were giving birth at all until the last 10 minutes where the epidural was wearing off. And I was doing that classic, I can't do it. But I think everyone was going, oh, I can't do it, you know, it's too much pressure, whatever. And I was like, no, I can't do it, because I'm going to tear from my vagina to my arsehole. I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, that's the worst thing in the world. I was like, I can't do that. I was very specific about that is what I meant when I can't do it. It wasn't the whole experience. It was very much that bit. But I did do it and it was all right.
Amazing.
So... anyway, they took him off to be cleaned up. So there was no delayed cord clamping or whatever. But I mean, I know it's a standard, but I hadn't even taken my birth plan out of my bag. So I like didn't rest on that too much. But it was more important that they suck a load of poo out of his ears and his eyes. So
I was like, gross. The river.
I know.
The poo,
and then they handed him back to me and started to try and initiate a feed, like almost instantly. But I was being stitched up at the same time for a second degree tear. And I'm holding a baby in about, and I kid you not, about 7 towels. So I was like, I can't even get my arm around him, let alone do this thing that I've never done before and don't know how to do. I'm also holding the gas and air, which I'm not putting down anytime soon, because you've literally got a needle at me. and I'm being stitched and I can fully feel that because the epidural is completely worn off. So I was like, I literally went, because I'll take the baby phase.
Yeah. I find that happens a lot, you know. We talk so much about skin to skin, which is lovely. And there's definitely, you know, absolutely, there's a wonderful place for it. But I have to say, I did that. I had a tear each time and I couldn't have them putting the lignocaine in the local anaesthetic whilst, like, cuddling my baby because it made me feel too on edge. Yeah, so I have absolutely. To say each time, and I remember with Wolfie, actually our littlest one, it was a second degree and I was stitched afterwards. And they left me for quite a while, but when it came to doing it, I had to hand Wolf over, take some gas and air and just like be present and focus on just a little bit like you do in when you're in labour.
I had to do the hypnobirthing breathing to get through that.
Stitching
the
bits up. Absolutely. Yeah. Same.
I had to that again, this kind of, it was the epidural and it was the stitching, and that was pretty much the only times. Oh, and then breastfeeding through nipple trauma and mastitis was another time that I used that up breathing. Yeah. And that was it. That's the only time I've used the breathing. Probably should have employed it a bit more. But yeah, I literally said, Robert, shirt off, baby, have it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, isn't it? I think what we have to remember is that skin to skin can be with anyone. It can be with, you know, a family member, a partner, whatever. And that we have our sort of birth preference list, but it really does depend on what plays out. And I had this whole image of, like, you know, you imagine meeting your baby and having them placed on you, and you see it in the movies where the women look perfect and kind of
natural, beautiful.
And, you know, feminine. I had my legs up in stirrups and they put the baby on me. And the first thing I said was, I want to be sick. And I just had to hand the baby over. And then I was massively sick. So it was just like,
imagine you meet your baby and vomit all over their face. I mean, I personally think that's a great initial meeting. I think that's very funny and one to
bonding,
write about.
Very bonding.
Very bonding. You're never going to get more intimate than that, are you?
But also, you can have your skin to skin at a later date as well if you need to. Like,
absolutely.
Yes, there's the first hour, but you know what? You've got your rest of your life with River and we absolutely. Have with our children.
I was pleased that Robert did the skin to skin, to be honest. I've got four younger sisters. The youngest one, there's only an 8-year difference between us. So I was very well versed with babies and kids in general. I was like, I'm a first time mum, but I feel like a second time mum whose first kid is maybe like 12. I feel like I've forgotten stuff rather than learning it. Like nappies and feeding and all that. I was coming from a place of quite good knowledge. But Robert had never held a baby before River. So I was it was quite nice, actually. And actually afterwards they were like, do you want baby back? And I was like, I actually feel a bit sparkly. That's the best way I can put it. Like, my whole body's twiddling a bit. And they were like, you need to go for a wee. I was like, I can't do anything at the moment. I can't actually get up or do a thing. I'm a bit, my whole body and face and mind is a bit, you know, spangly. So Robert held him for like 3 hours, but he held him like he was made of glass. And then he kind of relaxed. Yeah. And the midwife came in and went, do you want us to make you more comfortable? And he was like, yes, please. But it was good. And then we got to stay there for a day and they actually popped us back over in a midwife led unit and put us in a room with a double bed and a private bathroom. I was like, oh my God, this is so nice. I think by that point they'd been like, this girl has been in and out of this place. She had a bit of a rough one. and she's made us all laugh in the interim somehow. So we're going to pop her back in this bed because River hadn't done a wee yet. So they kept us in until he did. And they were like, if he's not done it in 24 hours, you know, then we've got to look at stuff. And he literally, again, really took us right up to the wire and did the biggest wee in the world all over the bed of like 23 hours. And then we went home and then they went, here, have a baby, take it home. And I was like, oh my God.
Now, this is the bit, though, isn't it? Because we focus so much on the birth. We focus on what that's going to look like, what control we can have over it, all of these sorts of things. And then we end up going home with our baby. And Becky and I talk about this all the time, even though we'd been birth workers for many years before both of us had babies, it still blindsides us having to go home with a new baby and think, so this is forever. It's 24 hours a day ongoing. What do I do with this little person? How was the postnatal? And when I talk about postnatal period, I mean, you're still in it in our eyes, to be honest with you. But initially, those first, say, you know, 6 to 12 weeks after taking River home, what was that like for you? What was that journey like?
It was actually all right, but obviously it came alongside COVID. So when he was born, I was sending Robert out every day to the supermarket just to try and find like some bread. I was like, God, of course. Go hunting. And I was like making him strip off at the door, like sanitize his whole body. I was like, go and shower now before you come back down. Like it was, I didn't go outside for weeks and weeks. And even then I just went up, walked up and down.
This was first lockdown, wasn't it? Of course,
yeah, so it was so scary.
And the world was
then,
such
it?
A crazy place,
oh,
wasn't it?
I actually think in the weeks, say a week and a half to 6 weeks in to first lockdown was probably the weirdest time, because even before we were in lockdown is when the toilet rolls and the supermarkets,
yes.
Because I remember the night before started having the contractions on the Thursday at 9 p.m. I said, should we go to Aldi on the train?
Yeah.
Because I don't feel great. But luckily I had meal prepped from Christmas onwards and put it in the freezer because I was like, I don't want to leave the house. So
well done.
God knows how I knew there was a pandemic coming. I was just prepping for motherhood. So we were pretty good for lots of stuff and it was okay. We literally had like 40 toilet rolls in the house anyway.
Yeah,
so
amazing.
It was, you know, as luck should have it. And also one of my massive anxieties was having people turn up unannounced or feel like I couldn't say no to them. And then I was like, oh my God, you legally can't touch my baby. This has worked out phenomenally.
Quite a few new mums have quite like that, haven't they, Becky?
Yeah. I think so many second time mums that I've worked with who really struggled with having boundaries and because obviously you don't want to say no to people because people are excited, but to the detriment then they've been tired and they've said this time round it's, although obviously the pandemic is awful, this time round it's been amazing because there's been that boundary there that they
absolutely.
Don't even have to, you know.
And I didn't have to be the one that enforced it either.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was no awkwardness. It was that was just
you're like, babes, it's illegal.
I know.
So
like,
I'll see you in 2 months' time,
or I'll call the police. I was like, yeah. So that was actually great. Also, Robert was due to return to the cruise ship where he works in May on the 8th. So he was only going to be around for 7 weeks, and then he was going to leave for 4.5 months. And as luck has it, if you look at it one way, if you look at it another way, we've not had jobs for a year. But if you look at it one way, he's been around for a year. He would have missed first smiles, he would have missed laughing, all sorts of stuff in that four and a half months.
And that's huge, Melissa. Absolutely.
It's been lovely
that he was around for that.
He's not missed a thing.
Amazing.
Which is just lovely. So I really enjoyed the postnatal period. We got our 24-hour visit from the midwife still. I had a lactation consultant come out the next day. We still had that. And then I got my 5-day check and then lockdown kicked in 2 days later. So that was it. There was no more things. His red book's got one way in.
It's mad, isn't it?
But other than
we've
had nothing.
Crazy. I know.
But it's good because actually they say, you know, your instinct will kick in. And it did. Yeah. And I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying about like guidelines as well. You can't say your instinct's going to kick in and then tell people that they're doing it wrong.
And actually what we find is that lots of people's intuition is completely squashed down because they're so caught up in trying to do it perfectly and follow this guideline and they say you have to do that. And actually, even amongst us professionals, we've all got slightly conflicting, you know, we've all got different ideas of how things should be done or could be done. And
you'll have the guideline in front of you, but then you'll also have the experience of being a parent. So you'll go, well, this is what the guideline says, this is what I did. And I have to find some middle ground where I can like give advice to people and not be disingenuous. But I mean, there's been all sorts of stuff from, you know, don't put them in jumperoos. And I was like, River's been in the jumperoo since he was 13 weeks because he had the craziest head strength of any child I've ever met. Like, and also he's been super alert since the second he was born. Like, he literally barreled out of me, covered, like caked in poo, and had his eyes wide open. And didn't shut them for like hours. just looking around, so alert. And everyone who came in went, so alert. And I was like, I know, there's something wrong with him. Like, is he all right? He's definitely more alert than I am at this stage.
I had a jumperoo. I used it with all three of mine when they were little. And I can't hear the song of it anymore.
We turned that music off and the bong that had to go. I was like, I can't listen to that. So I was like, I'd rather listen to Hey Bear Sensory for 3 hours straight because at least the song changes. But he loved that. It was a sad day when we had to put that away. It got to a point where I was like, we stand him up against the sofa and he just starts jumping. I was like, he's never going to learn to walk if he just jumps. So let's strengthen his legs back up in a different way again. But I think you just have to do what works for you at the time.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done parenting without the TV and the jumperoo for a chunk of time there. Like, there's no way. I wouldn't be able to get through the summer.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We hope you're enjoying our chat with Melissa so far, but now for a little ad break, because Lex and I want to tell you a little more about the fabulous Sophie Le Giraffe and why she's so popular with babies all around the world.
Thanks to her shape and size, Sophie Le Giraffe is perfect for your gorgeous baby's little hands. She's very light, her long legs and neck make her easy for your baby to grip, even from their earliest days.
And now back to the second part of our brilliant chat with Melissa. We talk about this quite a lot, Lecky and I, that this conflict between obviously looking at attachment parenting and having babies with you all the time, but actually the cultures that derives from are where people live in villages and tribes, and there's people around all the time to pass your baby to. Yeah. And I think it's amazing, and don't get me wrong, like, babies do need to be on us and they need to kind of, you know, smell us and hear us and all that, but we also do need to have a break.
And we don't live like tribes.
They spend all their time focused on
you know, primal things. Ultimately, we have our phones, jobs, supermarket trips.
Absolutely.
Our world is not a village raising world. It just
down
isn't.
Down to your friends might breastfeed your baby, your sister, your best friend.
Oh, I wish someone would have.
If your baby needs feeding,
that would have been the best thing for me.
Wet nurse me. I was like, someone else to do it. I don't want to do it.
I know, me too.
There's
me
not
too.
A market for wet nurses anymore in the UK,
know,
particularly.
It's very Victorian,
is there?
Isn't
it's a real
it?
Shame.
But we should crack that one back open.
I would have literally given any savings I had for, you know, because, I mean, I'd like to talk to you about breastfeeding, actually. So I obviously worked in the birth world for years and years and years before I had my baby, and I really wanted to breastfeed. Mm. And I had seen loads of women breastfeeding. I knew it wasn't completely plain sailing, but the course, bearing in mind that my eldest is 15, so it was a long time ago now, the course that I did, the video that we watched on breastfeeding had a woman breastfeeding her baby whilst rowing a boat across a lake, smiling.
Oh,
with
stop
her,
it.
So, I'm not fucking joking, seriously. Blowing in the wind. And
my
breastfeeding, it was so bad. And I was
so angry. I had to get Robert to sit in front of me in case I threw River across the room. Yeah, I was in so much pain. I was like, you have to be ready to catch if I drop.
Yeah. It was so painful for me. And I had nipple trauma and mastitis. They thought I had an abscess. I had to go to the breast clinic and have a scan. I was determined. Mm. And I think I would do it very differently now, but I had this thing of like, no, I must breastfeed, I must breastfeed, to the point where she would cry and my whole body would tense up and I would sort of shake slightly and I would have to get Barney to hold my hand while I latched her on.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, I had a word myself. I reached out to a lactation consultant. I learned an amazing tip about combing your breast, which we have in our book, actually, that really helped me to clear the mastitis so I didn't have to keep taking antibiotics. But the first time I got mastitis was the illest I think I've ever felt. I know that we want women to breastfeed and we want to kind of encourage them, but I almost feel like we set them up to feel like they're failing by not saying it can be really difficult.
Absolutely.
And not giving them enough information.
I think my most hated phrase from the whole of motherhood is, if you're doing it right, it won't hurt. Bullshit. It's going to hurt, because you're going to go from something not sucking on your nipple sometimes all the bloody day long, and suddenly you're going to have something that does do that. There's going to be some degree of pain as your nipples callous. Like I was saying to Robert the other day, I said, when I don't play my ukulele for like 3 months and then I pick it up, my fingers really hurt. So I have to put it down for 5 minutes. And then after 3 or 4 days, they go a bit tough and then I can play for ages. And it's exactly the same, except my fingers are a lot less sensitive than my nips. So I was like, no wonder this is awful. But it was the mastitis and the clogged up was one thing, and that was extremely painful. So I ended up relying quite heavily on the pump to clear it, because I was like, I can always latch the pump, because ironically, his latch must have been crap, but he was always super well fed from it. He had no issue. He was not like spluttering or coming off and being like, I'm not getting enough. He had a wonderful feed every time he latched on. He had a lovely time. I didn't, but he had a lovely time.
Did you have people check your latch?
I had one Zoom call with a lactation consultant, so obviously no one could come out.
COVID.
All I really wanted was someone to just come and like grab my boob, grab my baby and do it for me. But I couldn't have that. There was no hands-on help at all. So I had like a Zoom thing, but I was holding the phone, trying to hold the wriggliest, strongest baby I've ever held in my life. I was like, this isn't working. And there was always this thing of, you know, use the pump then, but, you know, get back to the breast, back to the breast. And I was like, I never left the breast. The pump is still, it's just a go-between. Yeah. And it then got to a point where I was actually quite indignant. And I was like, no, no, I'm going to pump. This is actually working really well. I know exactly what he's eating. Like, exactly. I don't have to assume based on dirty nappies or whatever like that.
Yeah.
I'm really in control of this situation. I'm well in control. And, you know, I was saying, oh, I always wanted to breastfeed. And it's now a point that I'm really strong on. Pumping is breastfeeding. We say to people when they are nursing, and say, you know, oh, but if you need to go to work, you can always pump milk. Well, you wouldn't tell that mum that she's not breastfeeding. As far as I'm concerned, breast milk, breastfed. If my tit made milk and I fed it to my baby, I breastfed my kid. And I think there's a culture, and I could talk about this for hours, but I think there's probably a culture that, you know, for me, I would like to see wording changed. I would like to see breastfeeding become a much more wider arching umbrella term. And I would like to see nursing be the word that we use for feeding at the boob, and pumping to be this, but breastfeeding to mean both. Because there are loads of women who exclusively pump in the UK, but there is like little to no support for them. Any bit of literature on the NHS website is about pumping when you return to work, or pumping if you want someone to feed a bottle. There's nothing if you pump and you need to set a schedule. You need to understand about power pumping. You need to understand about building a supply and dropping a pump and weaning slowly, or how to do that. There's absolutely nothing for them. So thank God for America and their shit maternity leave, because many women over there that have to exclusively pump, and there's a massive like online community of women who will help you, but it's never never medical help. It's always women like me who are offering support, but there's never and even when you talk to like lactation consultants, sometimes it's really tough to get them to understand what you mean. I spoke to my GP, went, and is baby breastfed? And I kind of felt myself floundering and going, yes, but from a bottle. And he like did not get it at all. And I was like, it's quite an easy concept, mate. I pump it into a bottle and then I put it in my baby's mouth. So I've become very, and even though I weaned now, I finished weaning last week, I'm now really like, this is my point that I'm going to keep hammering on with. And if it didn't take such a long time and such a lot of hard work that I quite frankly don't have the time for, I would genuinely start thinking about becoming like a lactation consultant of some, to some degree, but not to offer nursing support, because there's so many people doing that, but to offer pumping support for the women that do it, because it just isn't there.
Did you hire a double pump?
I didn't hire a double pump. I already had one. But I bought it secondhand on eBay and very quickly burned the motor out, because obviously it'd been used, and pumps are not really designed to be used exclusively. But I should, if I was to do it again, I'd probably give nursing another go, knowing what I know, but I would probably end up switching to exclusively pumping, because I'm absolutely know where I'm at with it. And I would hire a hospital grade pump at least for the first 12 weeks, just because of trying to make my life as easy as possible, really. And I know that it could be good. But I had a double electric. I used that the whole time. I didn't even have a manual pump in the house. I had a Hacker thing, but I didn't really. That was mainly for when I was nursing, for just catching the other side. Because I found sometimes when I took him off one boob and put him on the other, he was like, no, now I play. So I was like, we have to do a whole feed on one side. So I had to kind of pump the other side at the same time for those few weeks. But
But you found, it feels like you found your rhythm though. You found your,
absolutely.
You know, your way of doing things, and it worked for you for
I'm a massive advocate for exclusive pumping. Like, I'm under no illusion that the best thing, and you know, I know we say breast is best or fed is best or whatever, like the best thing for a baby is breast milk directly from the boob. No one's ever going to say that that's not the ideal thing that they could drink, because literally science has made that the ideal thing that they can drink. But it's fine taking it from bottle. Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely fine. You know, people say, oh, you know, your milk like won't react in the same way though because of the saliva that gets sucked in. I was like, right, for a start, that's a lot of conjecture anyway. There's not much science on that. You can read every paper under the sun. It's kind of assumed. But all I know is that when I pumped milk when he was ill, it was a completely different colour to when he wasn't. I didn't need his saliva to tell me I was ill. And I think what people forget is that if he's ill, I'm probably not ill, but we've been exposed to the same stuff. So my body's not presenting as ill because my immune system's strong, but I'm still producing the same antibodies that he needs because we're in the same place.
Yeah, because you get it from when you're kissing them as well, exactly. Don't you? When you're picking them up and kissing them, if there's bacteria on their skin, you will ingest that, and your milk will kind of deal with that as well.
Well, nursing is obviously amazing, and I would encourage everyone who thinks that they can to at least give it a go. I definitely think there are no studies into exclusive pumping, basically. It doesn't exist on the scientific radar, and I just wonder if it did, if people wouldn't feel bad about doing it. A lot of these groups on Facebook, you know, absolutely no mention of direct nursing whatsoever, because it can be really triggering for a lot of women. And that wasn't for me at all. But I can understand why it would be for some people. But I would love for it to be a place where people go, I'm choosing to do this. And it's not from a place of a failing.
Oh, I just hate that idea of failing.
Yeah. I know. I don't feel like I failed at all. I feel like I thrived. I actually think definitely. Making the choice to switch to exclusive pumping was probably, I would say, one of the strongest and most confident decisions I've made in my whole life. Because I was like, shit, I've taken a proper like topic and flipped it on its head, made a choice that was right, not only for me, my family, my lifestyle and my kid. I didn't have anyone to guide me. I've had no one telling me it's a good idea. And I'm doing it anyway. Yeah. And I was like, wow, I feel like proper empowered now.
Yeah.
And that is a real example of, that's proper intuition. Right for you.
And then also having to change and adapt as I went, you know, it wasn't like, oh, what should I do? I want to drop a pump. What should I do? It was like, I have to learn this shit on my own. I have to get out there. I have to get online and I have to do it myself. I've got to put the time in. So I worry for the women who want to do it, who don't have a lockdown or just the one kid or support at home, that they can't put that time in. I want there to be resources easily available to the women who feel like they've had to do this.
Melissa,
you know?
With all the other things you're doing, I'm not sure you have time to also do wetnurse.com.
pump.com. I know, that is my problem. I always try and help women on Instagram though. I do, I've always said, anyone who's pumping, please speak to me. I can't give you medical advice. I can just tell you what I did and whether it was good or it was bad, and then you can try it. But I'm always here to help. I always put them onto the Facebook groups that were a massive help to me as well. So I'll always kind of make sure that they're getting some support somewhere, because I don't want anyone to feel like it's a struggle.
Melissa, can we also talk about that article that you wrote for Grazia about body positivity? Because this is another thing that piqued our interest, to be honest with you, which again comes back to this idea of knowing yourself and seeing what's out there. And just for some reference, people who haven't perhaps read it, who might be listening, it was an article talking about sort of this culture of really loving your postnatal body and the fact that the whole concept of it didn't entirely feel right for you, because even though you appreciated and loved your body for what it had done, making and birthing River, you afterwards didn't feel entirely at home in your new post-birth body.
Not at all.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. In the first few weeks, I was like really loving it. I was like, oh my God, it's like Jelly Belly is hilarious. I was like, this is crazy. And I thought it was really funny. I was wearing high-waisted skirts and crop tops. I was like, I have absolutely no business wearing these, but I'm doing it anyway. And then I think as time went on, they kind of went, oh, you know, you can probably exercise again from now, or you can probably do this again from now. And I was like, I'm not doing any of that. I'm just eating everything that I see.
Were you a bit like, I didn't do that beforehand, so let alone doing it now?
Exactly. I was like, I had like all the energy in the world and I wasn't going for runs. Yeah. I'm certainly not going to do it now that I'm tired. Like, there's no way. And also something I think I wrote about in the article as well, my hips are even now obliterated. And it's only since starting to wean that I've noticed some strength coming back, because obviously I didn't know that relaxing was still a whole thing. So no wonder I can't walk down the stairs. So I felt disconnected from myself because my body wasn't working and I couldn't exercise to feel like I was healthy because my hips were hurting. There were just lots of things that were at play and I was like, I really don't appreciate how I look right now. I feel very disconnected from how I feel, more to the point. You know, my body is, it's not letting me down because it's done an amazing thing, but I'm feeling like I'm stuck behind myself. You know, I feel like I need to get past that. And all it was is, you know, I was constantly being told, I mean, not told people into Daily Mail comments threads and not exactly telling me anything other than that they're incredibly sad and need to get a life. But, you know, she's so ungrateful. I went through rounds of IVF and had 7 miscarriages. I'm like, right, for a start, that's very sad. For a second, your journey has bugger all to do with mine. So I'm very sorry, but you're not going to invalidate how I feel based on that. Based on because you think I'm living a charmed life because I've got this, that and the other. It's not true. You can probably walk down your stairs while holding a baby instead of having to bump down on your bum like a child.
Do you know, that's really interesting that you should say that, Melissa, because I've come across that lots. And I'm just going to put my hand up and say, you know, I went through infertility to get my first son. And it was long, it was arduous, it was sad. My dad died in the middle of it all. I'm not saying this is a pity party, but it was bloody awful, to be perfectly honest with you. And finally I had him, but that didn't stop me from finding it really bloody hard when he arrived.
Yeah.
And feeling like, I mean, you could knock me over with a feather, the shock of those early days and the amazingness of it, but the tiredness and how I could cope than actually having feelings of like, I shouldn't feel this way because we wanted him for so long and I had fertility treatment to get here, isn't helpful for anybody, is it?
It's almost like saying, well, you got what you wanted, so time to buck up, time to deal with it.
Pipe
like,
down and
so
get on
that
with
basically
it.
Mean
absolutely.
Then that anyone who's gone through any struggle, whether that's a difficult birth or struggling to get pregnant, they're not allowed to like have a moan about it after. Is that what you're saying? No one would bloody say that.
So silencing,
they do.
Isn't it? I have lots of ladies who have birth trauma or who actually you know, maybe body image stuff has come up, maybe they've struggled in the past with body image and how they feel about themselves, and then they feel guilty, and I say to them, listen, they're two separate things. How you feel about your birth or how you feel about your body has no relation to how you feel about your baby.
No,
that's a very separate relationship. Your relationship with what's happened to you is separate, and you're allowed to feel all those feelings. And it makes me feel when people turn on mums all the time.
Yeah, we mustn't shut down people's feelings. We mustn't tell people what they are and are not allowed to feel.
It's so
poisonous doing that. It's poisonous. It shuts people down. It takes their voice away. If something is triggering for you or you find it makes your heart hurt, it's not your terminal. You go and find the support you need and that you deserve somewhere else.
Exactly.
But I think that I think we cannot cancel people out, shut them down and tell them that whatever they're feeling isn't valuable.
No, exactly. And when I wrote the article was kind of a longer version of an Instagram post that I'd written. And the feedback from women underneath was not, you know, I wasn't doing it to fish for compliments. They weren't going, oh my God, but you look amazing. It was, oh my God, I fully understand how you feel. And I don't feel like I fit into any camp. It was, you know, I don't feel like I can claim body positivity because, you know, I might not be traditionally fat. So therefore, if I want to lose weight, does that make me fat phobic? You know, am I not happy to be fat? For me, I was a pretty svelte and very energized 8 to 10. And now I wouldn't even hazard a guess at what I am because I can't even get into a changing room to try any clothes on.
So I just wear elasticated clothes all the time these days. Exactly. It's difficult to gauge.
That's bang on. That's exactly what it is. It was just the feedback from people just going, I know what you mean. Like, I appreciate what my body's done, but I do not appreciate it in the mirror. I miss my jeans that maybe look great a year ago. Or I miss that top that I can't wear because I'm constantly having to pull a top down to breastfeed. Or I miss this, that and the other. And I think it's okay to miss yourself and be sad about it because no one can prep you for how much is your life's going to change. Let's be real. My life has changed for the better. You know, it has absolutely changed for the better. I feel, if it was ever possible, more confident. I feel more grounded in my beliefs. I feel much more open to airing them, which is probably to my detriment most of the time. But you know, I've gained a lot of confidence.
That's transition, isn't it? And it's getting used to everything that's happened to us. And that takes a long time to
process. I think we talk about the fourth trimester and that's amazing because that is a really valid time. But we don't just, our babies don't turn 3 months old and we just like suddenly, hey,
oh,
human again.
No.
Like River's a year.
No.
And I absolutely still feel sometimes like I just had it. I'm so postnatal.
And I very, very much believe, I'm sorry, I'm putting it out there. My son is going to be 5 in April, my youngest of 3. And I am postnatal.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to get t-shirts
postnatal.
Made. Yeah, we are.
Hashtag
I'm
still postnatal.
And you're like 70 years old.
I
I want to do a flash mob where we all stand up. No, I'm postnatal. Yeah, no, I'm exactly. postnatal. And then we all go round.
Yeah.
Can you organise it?
I definitely feel like I'm the one who can organise that. But yeah, I think there's no cutoff for when our baby stops being a baby. Just because they're a toddler, no. just because they're starting school, you're a different journey yes. in your parenting life. If you're, I think sometimes as well, if you're a stay-at-home mum, I don't think you're ever going to stop being postnatal because you go from being not a mum to being a mum all the day long. And that switch is what happens in the beginning. You go from not being a mum to suddenly being a mum.
Yeah,
and I think when people start to return to work, then they go, well, I'm not being a mum for a little while. You know, I still am a mum and I've still got my kids in my mind all the time, but I'm also concentrating on this. But if you're at home with your baby all the time, you are only mum at that time.
Yeah.
So I think you're Absolutely. Always going to feel postnatal as long as you're around your kids that frequently, especially.
Mm. Definitely.
But yeah, I think there definitely needs to be, it's not even support, because I think, you know, by a year, lots of us have kind of got a handle on our day. And, you know, we haven't, they're all different, let's face it. But we all we kind of know, you know, they're probably going to wake up around this time, probably going to go to bed at this time. But it would be great if there was just an acceptance or an understanding from other people of just going, do you know what? They couldn't answer the phone and I get it. Or do you know what? They're just having a shit day.
Yep.
Let's just let them have their shit day.
Exactly. Anything goes. I always say that to new mums. Whenever you make plans, just have a caveat that if you've had a rubbish night, if you're just not feeling it, you're allowed to cancel. Like there has to be a kind of an allowance for people.
And
with
I think people worry as well. They go, you know, I mean, to be fair, most of my friends don't have children. Mm-hmm. They're all older, or their children are grown up. Mm. Most of my friends are like mid-40s onwards. Because that's the people I connect with. I have like very few friends my own age, a bit of an old soul. And most of them are like single, fabulous, child-free. And I was like, oh my God, shit, I'm going to literally lose all my friends because I'm going to have very little in common with them all of a sudden. But it hasn't worked out like that at all. And it's great. But I also know that if I couldn't make the Zoom call or couldn't make the whatever, they would never hold that against me. But I think there is such a worry for people that will happen. That they sometimes feel like they have to force themselves to be the old version of themselves. And I miss the old version of myself all the time. She was a right laugh. She was like proper funny and she was really enjoyable to be around. And she was always the person that went, let's go somewhere new, and would just like rally the troops.
Oh, Melissa, the same as well, because we had our first baby when we were 28. Mm. I've been with my husband since we were 17. We met at Sixth Form College. Aww. And we had a bloody brilliant time in our 20s. Mm. We travelled loads. Mm. I was working at big London hospital. We used to go out for dinner every, you know, so often after work. We'd catch a show. We just were living this wonderful, enriched, really privileged, I've got to be honest, really, really privileged, wonderful life. And we travelled lots. And loads of our friends were in London at the time as well. And so when I had my first child, I put my hand up and say there was a grieving process for me because I missed it. I did. I was, and again, this comes off the back of a fertility journey. So I wanted it so much. And I was a midwife, for goodness sake. Mm. And going through pregnancy, birthing, having a new baby was so wonderful in so many ways. But the old Alexis was also allowed to say, can I just put my hand up?
Yeah.
I kind of miss what we used to do. It's like, and I think that again, that's all right.
It's as though they've died. Yeah. It's as though died, but they're actually still there, which kind of makes it sadder. Because they haven't, you know, if they died, you'd be like, right, closure. We're going to close the chapter. We're going to move on. And, we're going to remember them fondly. But, you know, we're going to move forwards. But they're not actually dead. That person is still very much within you. So then you're shit, do I have to, like, let her out occasionally? Is she just a prisoner?
What do I do here?
Then lockdown comes along and I can't do it anyway.
Well, quite.
So but then no one can do anything. So it's okay, isn't it? Not missing out on anything.
I don't know whether that's made it easier or harder, to be honest.
Yeah. Can we ask you about you've got a clothing brand, haven't you? River and Six.
That's me.
So we had a little peek. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
What led you to set that up?
Lots of things, really. It was always something I toyed with the idea of. And then as lockdown went on and on and on, and I was like, oh my God, we definitely are not bringing any money into our home. Now, thank God, Robert had saved really well, because otherwise we would have not made it through this year. Like, that's a fact. We would have been out on our asses. Yeah, it's been crazy. The industries that we work in, which is performance and cruising, don't exist. Like, yeah, so, you know, there's been two.
But you've been hit so hard by it.
Yeah, badly. Yeah. We've taken the brunt of it and somehow been quite smiley throughout the whole thing, you know, by some miracle. But yeah, so I was kind of shopping for clothes for River, because his wardrobe is something I'm deeply passionate about. And I was like, oh, it's just not quite what I want. And I love matching him. But it's always a bit cheesy. And there's just this one font that I just hate. And it's on every T-shirt, Mama. And it's like kind of half script. Oh my God, I hate it. So I was like, I just need something that I would wear. And it's less so much something that River would wear, but it's something I want to wear. And then a baby version of it. So that's kind of how I started off. Now it's just kind of evolved a little bit. So it's just whatever I'm feeling at the time. I basically put on a T-shirt. So I just recently launched one that's anyone could be a feminist, because again, the whole ethos of my brand is that it's not so much that it's gender neutral, it's gender free. You know, I raise River to just be a kid. He's just a baby, you know. And you know, I still call him boy, and he's a he, and he's this, that, and the other, but there's not a lick of blue in his wardrobe. There's no car painted on a wall, that he hasn't got a jumper with a JCB on it. Like, that's for some reason appropriate for a baby. There's very few like dinosaurs and stuff. He absolutely loses his shit when the My Fairy Garden advert comes on in between YouTube. Like, you know, we just live whatever. You know, we just do whatever. And I just wanted to create a brand that also allowed for that, you know, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, if you have a baby boy, dressing them head to toe in blue and buying them only cars and diggers and stuff. But it can get quite toxic.
On that fairy front, I have to tell you something really cute that happened yesterday. You just reminded me. We were walking back from the boys' school, and there's a house on the way down the road towards our car that the front garden is full. She obviously collects fairies, right? So she's got absolutely hundreds of them in there. And Toby, as my eldest son, was walking beside Wilf, and Wilf goes, Toby, look at all the fairies. And Toby, so genuinely, and I knew that he did it for Wilf, went, that is so cool. And it was just this really so adorable sweet moment. And I just thought, boys, you know, little brotherhood. It's just, there,
it's so lovely when, and I think we make excuses for boys as well, you know, boys will be boys. I'm like, that's such an excuse for bad behaviour. And I used to work in schools and also as a performing arts teacher. And you encounter lots of different types of boys, obviously, when you do that. And you're not just with your own boys or boys that you know. And, you know, oh, boys will be boys. No, no, he pushed a girl over in the playground. That's not boy being boy at all. He was a dick. Or, oh, boys will be boys. And he's like, no, he made a mess. Like, that's annoying. I've got to clean it up now. And I think there's a culture at the moment, we raise girls to be more than they are, you know, and it's you know, break through that glass ceiling. And there's not really an alternative in place for boys, because boys already don't have a glass ceiling. So I was really worried, actually, when I found out River was going to be a boy. I was like, how do I raise him to still be competitive and ruthless and want to always do the best that he can do without raising him to be a dick? Because he's already going to have a degree of privilege. He's white. He's male. Obviously, I don't know if he'll be gay or straight, but let's assume straight. He's going to be pretty privileged to start off with. So I need to make sure that he's still ruthless, but also understands that. And that's such a tough thing, because with girls, you almost don't, you almost just go, just break through glass ceiling, you know, smash the patriarchy. Yes. And I'm like, how do I tell a boy to smash the patriarchy? It's a tough one. I can't really tell River to do that. I need the world to tell their sons to do that, so that my son can do it. You know, it's such a tough one. But I'm very passionate about kind of smashing these gender norms on the head. And I could talk about that for hours and hours and hours. But I just wanted to create a line of clothes that anyone could wear, and that they weren't bright and colourful, because I wanted to create T-shirts that were either black or white with the design, because then I want the kid to dress themselves. I want to go, I'm going to wear my T-shirt that's a small friend, and then I'm going to wear it with my leopard print leggings and my tiger print boots and my flowery hat.
Amazing.
And then another kid will go, well, I'm going to wear it with my football shorts and my scarf and just dress themselves. I want the clothes to be a base that, you know, still has a little bit of something about them, and that they can match with a sister or, you know, their mum or their dad or whoever. But that also they can fully imprint upon, and then the next day be someone totally different.
What's the six stand for? What's it
so
mean?
The six is the extra 6 days that he decided to hang around before he decided he'd vacate.
Oh, no.
Oh,
I'm never, ever going to let him forget that he went over the due date in my life.
Both of mine were born at 42 weeks, so I feel your pain.
I was so worried about being induced that I was like, I can get you out, come on. Ironically, because I didn't want to go to the labour ward, and look where I ended up anyway.
Yeah.
So there we are.
Best laid plans, eh?
Always.
Yeah.
Melissa, finally, we want to ask you the question that we always ask all our guests at the end of the show. If you were to write a note going out in a mother box to a brand new parent with your best bit of advice on it, what would it say?
Stick to your guns. Don't let anyone touch your baby if you don't want them to. Don't let any health visitor tell you that your kid's not meeting the standard that they want. Don't let anyone tell you that you're doing something wrong when it feels really right. Just stick to your guns. If something feels good, do it. If something doesn't feel good, stop doing it.
Brilliant. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, darling, for joining us today.
Yeah,
it's been
thank you.
There's been a lot of lols, I'm going to be honest.
I know. See, you've got a little cheeky bit of the old Melissa because River's asleep downstairs. And as luck would have it, he literally hasn't woken up.
Like, extra thank you, because I know how precious that free time is.
No,
so
that's
we
fine.
Really do appreciate
we were sat in the garden doing nothing. So it's a nice day.
Really
so
loved
good.
It. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amazing. Thanks once again to the wonderful Melissa Suffield for joining us today and talking so honestly and with humour about her motherhood journey.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about the work that we do, look out for our books, The Little Book of Self-Care for New Mums and The Little Book of Self-Care for Mums-to-Be, where we will talk further about birth, parenthood, relationships and much more.
We've really enjoyed this episode. We're sure that you all have your own stories of your bubbers and their love for our partner this season, Sophie Le Giraffe, and we would love for you to share them with us.
Send us your photos and your stories to our Instagram at Notes from the Mother Box, and don't forget to tag at Sophie Le Giraffe UK on Facebook and Instagram to share your pics with her too.
Join us again next week for more chats with another amazing guest.
See you next time on Notes from the Mother Box.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.